Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, a look at the Czech nobility through the lens of a new TV series. And later we meet a young Czech poet who was born in Ukraine. But first, Chris Johnstone is here with the latest edition of Czech History.
The opening music there to a series of 8 programmes on public broadcaster Czech television called Modrá krev or Blue Blood, which is already around halfway through. The series looks at the modern Czech aristocracy, in many cases of families which have returned from exile, with each episode focusing on one particular noble family. Many Czechs may be familiar with the names of those families since their palaces are often dotted around Prague and their country homes and castles remain landmarks across the country. We're talking here about the Kolovrats, Černin, Schwarzenberg, Sternberg, Lobkoviches, Nosic's family, Colorado Mansfield and Kinsky's. But while the stone and bricks and mortar monuments have been a constant, often going back 1,000 years, Czech noble families have had a much more mixed fortune over the last 100 years or so. Tainted, rightly or wrongly, by the Habsburg Empire and its plethora of aristocratic rulers and titles, the newly formed Czechoslovakia banned the use of aristocratic titles in December 1918. There was a slight change later in which a fine was added to punish those who broke the law, but other changes also allowed the use of noble titles bestowed abroad. And in September 1939, the Czech government of the Nazi-dominated protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia actually allowed noble titles to be used again. The idea seems to be that Czech nobility could be encouraged to support the government, which walked a delicate line between obeying the Nazis and covertly opposing them. But that's getting a bit far too ahead. The changes in character of the new Czechoslovak Republic affected more than just titles. A sweeping land reform sought to deal with the problem that around a third of all farmland was in the hands of noble families and the Catholic Church. The Agrarian Party, which represented rural interests and especially those of small landowners who benefited from the reforms, was a dominant party in the interwar period and was often hostile to the nobility. In the public sphere, where they had played a dominant role in the past, the noble families were often now sidelined. Noble families did get together to oppose land reform, but the opposition split into nobles who felt more Czech and those who felt more German. And the latter had a wider opposition to the new republic, which was to resurface later. But while many nobles had difficulty getting used to the republic, some wholeheartedly supported it. One of these was Max Lobkovich. He was one of the leading nobles who prepared and signed up to a declaration of nobles supporting the Czechoslovak government in the troubled years of 1938 and 1939. He later joined exiled Prime Minister Edvard Beneš in London and from 1942 was Czechoslovak ambassador to London. Before and during the war, he used his connections with the British nobility, to which his wife belonged, to support the Czechoslovak cause. He was labelled a traitor by the Nazis and all the family's possessions were confiscated. They were partially returned after the war but confiscated again by the communists in 1948 after the family fled to the United States. Some members of another noble family who prioritised their Czech roots were the Schwarzenbergs. Adolf Schwarzenberg of the Krumlov branch of the family notably gave the Czechoslovak state 1 million crowns to complete defences against Nazi Germany in 1937. When the Sudetenland was occupied, he refused to greet Adolf Hitler at the Krumlov castle. The Nazis confiscated all the family's property and he was later forced to flee. But there was another side of the coin as well. Ulrich Kinsky was a fanatical supporter of the Sudeten German leader, Konrad Heinlein, and he is credited with using his influence with the British nobility to swing them round to the opinion that the German-speaking areas on the border be split off from the rest of Czechoslovakia. Ulrich Kinsky is even credited by some with helping to persuade Lord Runciman to lead his mission to Czechoslovakia in 1938. That mission eventually backed the cession of the Sudetenland to Germany. One of those present at the unveiling of the TV series was former Czech Foreign Minister and presidential candidate Karel Schwarzenberg. Born in 1937, towards the end of the First Republic, Schwarzenberg regards the Nazi-dominated protectorate, interim post-war democracy ahead of the 1948 communist takeover, and the communist regime as difficult periods for the nobility. The 1940s are remembered as a whole as a dark episode.
The 40s, yes. Yeah, because, I mean, already the First Republic, it was very negative. Towards the Czech Republic, Nazis too, and communists especially. So, I mean, I remember in my childhood, it was not easy to be a child of such a family, meeting other boys of his age.
Indeed, even under the so-called democratic interim period between the end of World War II and the February 1948 communist takeover, a special law, the so-called Schwarzenberg Law, Lex Schwarzenberg, was passed by Parliament in 1947 to confiscate most of the family's massive estates. There had been no question about the family's anti-Nazi credentials. It was simply felt that they were too rich and that the efficient operation of their farms, estates and factories was shaming some of the new state and collective enterprises. What remained was later confiscated by the communists and the family fled to Austria in December 1948. But property confiscation was nothing new for the Schwarzenbergs. It happened under Karel V in the 16th century, during the Swedish invasion, under the Bavarian kings, under Napoleon, and under the Nazis. Karel Schwarzenberg agrees with most who reckon that those nobles who fled the communist regime had it better than those who stayed behind.
Those who stayed here, then they met suddenly in the factory working, or as Prince Lovkovic, who worked on the road in Plzeň, the father of one who was sitting here, he was famous that his part of the road in Plzeň was the only which was always, when there was ice and snow, he worked during the night to make it clear, and had enormous respect due to that.
He was talking there about Yaroslav Claude Lobkovic, who'd earlier worked as a manager of the nationalised family estate and later, after his job on the roads, worked in a warehouse for a Pilsen State Books Company. He died in 1985. Similar fates were shared by others who stayed behind. Some of them were described in a 1966 film documentary, Citizens with Emblems, which showed Theobald Zerzin as a lorry driver and Zdeněk Stenberg as a stagehand at the Karlin Musical Theatre. The director was banned for several years from making more films by the communist authorities because the documentary was judged to have been too provocative. The later day director of the Czech television series, Alena Cincherová, should have no such worries. She explained why she'd embarked on the series.
One of the inspiration was František Kinský, a noble who is guiding through all those noble families for years, a good friend of mine, and I was every time happy to listen his stories, and he's talking about noble families and about the history. And as I am documentaristic, I decided that it's most likely not interesting only for me, that it should be interesting also for the viewers, TV viewers.
And while the history of some of these great families is outlined, most of the focus of the series is on how those families which stayed and saw their fortunes changed overnight in 1989 or returned afterwards from exile are now faring and how they relate to other Czechs.
The most surprising feeling for me is that even in those families where they were really very heavily persecuted during the communist times, those are the families who stayed here. They are not bitter. They don't have any bad feelings. They have a nice relationship to this country because they have it for centuries.
And the relationship from the bottom upwards?
Until now, I sometimes hear the voices of xenophobia. That's another reason why I made this series, because I admire those people who came from abroad, from the countries which were not their native countries, but they grown up, they started to speak with other languages, and then they are coming back to Czech Republic, and they, even in an adult age, they have to learn Czech language, which is one of the most difficult languages all over the world, and they learn it, but the people here, some of the people here, I cannot say it that everybody, but some people here, oh, they are foreigners and they don't speak properly Czech. So that I was trying to fight against this.
And while many of the questions about the return of land and property have been resolved, there are still some outstanding cases involving noble families where it's not the case. For the Colorado Mansfeld, some of the Czech castles and estates were returned, but an exception was the Opochno stately home and the collection of works of art that went with it. That's still the subject of a legal battle. Alena Cincerova has no doubts about whose side she is on.
That's one of the last cases, and I hope that the justice will win. Means it will be returned back to Christina, Colorado.
But it's perhaps best to end with a comment from Karel Schwarzenberg, who sees the current Czech nobility as a lot more comfortable in their country, although perhaps still not accepted 100%.
Historical experience disappears with the generation. Prejudices go for generations and generations.
That edition of Czech History was produced by Chris Johnstone. In a Europe of growing nationalism, Maria Ilyashenko is a young Czech poet who defies categorization. She was born in Kiev into a family with both Ukrainian and Polish roots, but has lived here in the Czech Republic since she was 9 years old. Her poetry is in Czech, but her writing is filled with the rich influences of the languages, experiences and cultures that form her identity. In Czech books, Maria Ilyashenko talks to David Vaughan about the bonds between her life and her work.
Maria Ilyashenko's poetry is finding a rapidly growing readership, both in the Czech Republic and abroad, where her work has been translated into at least half a dozen languages. Her poems are intimate and internal, but also restless as they migrate in place and time, taking us as far as the Baltic Sea, the Himalayas, and beyond. When I spoke to Maria in the rather less exotic context of her shared apartment in the Prague suburb of Žižkov, she began by telling me something of her life story.
My story is that I was born in Kiev and my first language was Russian, and my parents really read me a lot of Russian poets, Pushkin, Mandelstam, also Daniel Harms, who was avant-garde poet and very funny even for children. So I heard a lot of poets and writers, and it was natural for me. But when we moved to Czechoslovakia, there was a situation that you have absolutely different tradition.
And you were just 9 years old when you moved to the Czech Republic, or to Czechoslovakia, and that was just after the fall of communism. You've made that switch from your native language to what I suppose has become your second native language, your Czech. Does it come quite naturally to you? Or do you think you may be a poet who's not quite a Czech poet?
My situation was very specific because when we moved to Police nad Metují, which is a small town near Polish border, everything in my life completely changed. Not only country, not only language, but also our family situation, because my father left our family and we stayed with mom. So I was completely cut off from everything. So it is good situation for switching. And there was also another story. When we moved to Police, there was big Christian community, like Protestant community, and my mom became a part of it, and myself also. It was something like a family for me. So I start to feel like a Czech person, and to feel that Czech language is my language, and the Russian language stayed somewhere in some deep layout of myself.
It's high time we heard one of your poems. You've chosen for a start a poem called Makalu, which is the name of a mountain, isn't it?
Actually, from my childhood, I want to be a climber. And I wrote this poem when I lived in Letná, in Prague. I was ill very long time. I was very sad because my plans for climbing were disappointed. And I feel like black coal. Makalu. Jsem jako šálek čaje. Křehká bílá schránka, hořká chuť. To je jako nemít své ruce v rukou. To je jako být v moci trojhlavého boha. Láska, říkáš. Makalu, říkám.
Makalu. I'm like a cup of tea. A white, fragile case, a bitter taste. It's like not having anything to lean on. It's like being in the power of a three-headed god. Love, you say, Makalu, I say. Below are the plantations of black tea. Below there is the base camp I should be in. But there was no summer this year, so no winter will come. The black coal in basements is sleeping and dreaming during the white day. Tell me about the English translation. Who translated it for you?
Silva Ficova translated these poems.
And she's a translator whom we've featured on Czech Books in the past. How does it feel to you hearing the English version after the Czech? Does it sound very foreign to you?
It is very beautiful. I have no problem with this poem in English. It sounds very natural for me.
And that poem is from the collection Osip, Aims to the South. When it was published 2 years ago, it was talked about a great deal and it was nominated for one of the most prestigious Czech literary awards. Are the poems connected to one another, or is it simply a collection of poems that you've put together as an anthology?
There is a part of this book. It is a long poem, Osip Aims to the South. It is a story of a small bird who is a poet and who lives in Libeň, where Hrabal lived.
So Libeň is part of Prague, and Bohumil Hrabal, the novelist, is famous for having lived there and written about it.
Libeň is a very special part of Prague. It is very beautiful and very ugly. There is a big mess, and it looks still like 20 years ago. So this Osip, he lived in Libeň in a flat, in a cage, but his dream was go to the south with the birds he saw by window.
You talk about that complex childhood that you had, and also with the different languages. And you mentioned this Christian part of your upbringing as well, which also brings in a whole other lot of symbols and elements of language. And I've noticed as well there are references in quite a lot of your poems to the ancient gods as well, to the classical gods. You seem to be a poet who has a lot to draw from.
Yes, I think it's true because I feel like still a very young person, but my life was really very adventurous.
Maybe we could hear now a poem that features several languages for a start and also several place names. Tell us a little bit about this poem.
This poem is about and from Gdańsk. I was in Gdańsk 3 years ago. It was not only because of studying, but because my grandmother was from Poland. So I have Polish roots and I really love Poland. I was 30 that year, so I felt a little bit like my youth is finishing slowly. And I was going to university library and I saw there very old pigeons who looked like they come to die. And when I come back, I see very young pigeons. And I wrote this poem. It is about this contrast. And it is also a contrast between Polish part of Gdańsk and German part of Gdańsk, because Gdańsk was a German city. And when you come to Gdańsk, you still could find a lot of memories from these German times. So that's why there are German and Polish words. V zimě mi bude 30. Staří holuby na čepíření, předoucí jak kočky, chodí umřít na ochos univerzitní knihovny. Lehni si tak, ať na tebe svítí březnové slunce, ať ti pobřežní vítr ochlazuje opeřenou tvář.
I'll be 30 this winter. Old fluffy pigeons purring like cats come to die on the walkway of the university library. Lie down, let the March sun shine on you. Let the offshore wind cool your feathered face. In Jaskova Dolina, doves with new feathers, shining and focused in the sun like a camera lens, devour it whole, or at least a half of it. Then you will shine, oh, and how. The rest of us, between New Oliva and Old Wrzeszcz, between the German Beschlagwerk and the Polish Fidrigalki, between I'm not dying anymore and I have to stay out of the sun, a little battered but still able to focus in the salty and foamy and nameless air. You've got different languages in there. Do you enjoy that play with language?
Sometimes I need some words which are important to make a context or to make an atmosphere. So, of course, we have in Czech language some words for Fidrigalki, but the sound is absolutely special and Polish.
And Fidrigalki, as you've already explained to me, means something like trinkets, little things. Which brings me to another question about today's Europe. You're a product of a Europe that is very complex in terms of nationality, in terms of language. And yet Europe at the moment seems to be heading in a direction where nationalism seems to be on the rise. Is this something that you see as an existential threat?
For me, it's an existential problem because I feel myself like Central European, because I couldn't cut myself to Ukrainian part, Czech part and Polish part. It is impossible.
And the country that you are born in, Ukraine, of course, is still gripped by a violent conflict. That must also have had a significant impact on you.
Yes, it is very sad, but I was in Kiev last year and I was surprised that the atmosphere in the city was very positive. People has some dream. They want to be a part of Europe. So it is also a time of hope, and everyone who comes to Ukraine could feel it.
Let's end with a final poem, which you say is a poem that in a way tells your life story. It's a poem called Geraniums, and among other things, it's about God, isn't it?
It is a poem about God, but more it's about two different types of faith. The first part of this poem, it is about my childhood. Kiev is a very beautiful city and there are a lot of churches. These gold churches and blue sky. So my memories are in this first part of a poem connected with religion, but more in cultural way. Then there is also my story when I came to Czech Republic. I was in a Christian community and it is experience with a very strict faith. It is absolutely different perception of God. The name of the poem is Geraniums, which is a symbol for me. In all towns in Czech Republic, you could see pots with geraniums, which is symbol of family life and family harmony, but also it is symbol of very limited life.
And then at the end of the poem, you have another version of God, don't you?
Yes, it is a little bit surrealistic. It is image of Jesus, which you could imagine when you come to Israel. And you could imagine just a normal guy who lives in Jerusalem. In this part, I a little bit come back to first part, to my childhood, when the image of Jesus was image of someone very nice I want to meet.
Geraniums. Yet I think he used to be different when I was a child. He loved the golden veins of stained glass, touching them with his finger, staying in festoons. His mother loved dressing him in blue sky. Cerulean blue, she said when she dressed him in the little blue pelerine, with garden flowers, pink poppy, milk thistle, and animals unheard of in the splendid garden. He spoke Polish and rarely Russian, yet mixed the languages, never tried to bargain, leave, surrender, and I will grant you peace. Since he knew, the greatest blessing is not in peace, but in unrest. Unrest, not guilders, drove the ships on long journeys. Peace means geraniums, an endless number of geraniums. He used to have different habits. He loved travelling, especially on a donkey's colt. Drank Syrian red wine, read all sorts of avant-garde. And every morning he crossed the Kidron Valley on foot. It was ages ago, in the times of patriarchs, prophets, and donkeys' colts. Those were the days, and yet I think God used to be quite different when I was a child. And that's also translated by Silva Fitzova. Well, we're running out of time, so Maria Ilyashenko, we've heard some of your poetry, talked about your fascinating life so far. You're still very young, and so I look forward to many more poems from you. Thank you very much for talking to Radio Prague.
Thank you for invitation.
Maria Ilyashenko, who was speaking to David Vaughan for that edition of Czech Books. If you've got any comments about today's program here on Radio Prague, do please get in touch. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz. And you'll also find us, of course, on Facebook and on Twitter. But that's all for now, folks. For me, Ian Willoughby, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you for listening and enjoy the rest of your weekend.